host for this evening, live from Studio 76 in Valrico, Florida, Derek Old School Fournier.
So I give zero f-
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. This is Derek Old School Fournier coming to you live from Studio 76 here in Valrico, Florida. Great to be back in front of the podcast after a week off whilst I was in Miami doing the job that actually pays my bills. I see we've got people filing into the chat room, which is good. It's good to see everyone coming in tonight on a Wednesday night. The weather hasn't kept everyone afraid. It's amazing how Floridians seem to react to cold weather. I think we had three cold weather days last year. Hopefully that means we'll get a real winter this year. I'm looking very forward to it. As a rotund gentleman, I certainly enjoy the cooler weather from time to time. Though this weekend, and I know that I see my man Kirk Creel in the chat room as well, both he and I will be up in Chicago, where it is much, much cooler. And we will probably be bitching about how cold it was when we were in Soldier Field. But hopefully, we will be bitching after another victory. And this is a show that we've only gotten a chance to do once before this year. It's a show after a win. So welcome to What the Buck After a Victory. It's very odd this year to have these feelings. We'll be talking about those feelings. We'll have the voice of reason in some ways. Steve White coming in at about 9:20 to make sure that we don't get too excited about some things. But also, I think he's got some perspectives, as usual, that will train your eyes a little bit to let you know what to look for. There were some things that I thought were very good that happened this week against the Washington Redskins. Now, of course, you will be bombarded with all of the comments about how bad the Washington Redskins are, and that is not necessarily incorrect, but it doesn't matter because they are the team we had to play. This is something we talk about every year. When you get a win, typically when the team's not doing well, the first thing that goes on is a discount of the win. And then when you get a loss, it's an abysmal loss. You don't get both sides of that coin, guys. You just don't. There were some things that I thought were very good about with the Bucks' performance this week, and I think that there's some things that can be built on. So welcome to the show. Let's thank our sponsors and get the housekeeping out of the way. There's a number of things that I'd like to speak to you guys about this evening, and I don't know how much time we're going to have, to be honest. We'll talk about the game, obviously. We'll talk about the Bears game. I also did some research that I think I found very interesting on draft history, and I was watching the Bucks Brief show last night. I think Fish is in the chat room now. His show is on at 9 o'clock on Tuesday nights. Great show. You guys should definitely tune in. I know I saw Ryan Winfrey and a couple of our other regulars over there last night. And I threw the data out at him because he was talking about some similar topics, and I had the data in front of me, and it was pretty telling. So if we have some time, we'll talk about that because I know there's a large section of the fan base who is actually upset with the Bucks getting a victory this week against the Redskins under the belief that we should tank to guarantee the highest draft pick, which I've just fundamentally think is fucking stupid. With whatever amount of respect I'm supposed to show, I guess all due respect is the phrase I'm supposed to use, but all due respect in my mind would be absolutely fucking zero. So that's not really the phrase I should use, but for someone else, that would be the phrase to use. I think that's stupid. As Herm Edwards says, you play to win the game. I don't think anyone gets to the level that these gentlemen have gotten to without wanting to win the game. Part of the fan base, I don't know why that's a question. There is definitely a part of the fan base, a group of the fans. Fan base isn't a tough word. Calico, you're super sharp. I don't understand what's confusing about that. Let me know. But listening to sports radio, there were a lot of people that were frustrated that we got a win. And if you look at social media, it's even worse, though social media doesn't have quite the filter that local radio does. Anyway, big shout-outs to the Winghouse of Tampa. You know, these guys are taking care of us, which is awesome. Shadowhawk, that's an interesting concept, actually. We'll review how true that is. That seems to be common belief. And when I throw this data out here, what I'm hoping is Calico Jack, because he is an analytical, will go get the rest of the data for me because I only got round one. And I really want all the rounds, and I really want them in a database that I can run queries against because the trends were very, very interesting. So at any rate, Winghouse of Tampa, great job from these guys. We had a terrific watch party there this weekend. If you were there, thanks for coming. If you brought food for the Claiborne Family Sack Hunger Campaign, thank you so much. That campaign is going so well. Tracy and Adrian, the whole family's excited. Every time we're doing an event, we're collecting tons and tons of food. And then I forgot who it was, and maybe Spen in the chat room can let me know who it was who told us about Feral Roofing. But a big shout out to Feral Roofing Company on Facebook. This is a local roofing company started up by, I think, the wife and a husband started it up. And they wanted to get more likes on the Facebook page, so they ran a social media campaign. and asked for people to post a charitable group that they thought was worthy. And our people went out in mass, and What the Buck Really Matters won their prize, which was over $1,000 worth of non-perishable food to the charity of your choice, which was us, which is going to the Claiborne Family Sack Hunger Campaign. So I think Cheryl and Tracy actually are going to be going over there. They're going to pack the truck full of that. It's like a pallet or two pallets of food from Publix, which is just phenomenal, which means Melissa Phelps, big shout out to Melissa Phelps for finding this. So those two pallets of food will go into the big collection of food that we've already got, and any of the gift cards and cash that was donated by other folks throughout the campaign can be used to go get perishable items like turkeys to round out the supplies, which is tremendous. So big shout out to all you guys who participated in that. Elder Ford of Tampa, thank you for all the things you guys are doing, continuing to support us. AFD Limited for continuing to keep us lubricated, along with Jesse James Spirits and Full Throttle Saloonshine. And then, of course, we would be remiss not to mention the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge, who will be back in full force for our next home game with the pirate ship. So we will be having a great time at that tailgate. It is not this week. It is the week after. And we'll be back in our element. I think I should probably open up the show a little bit with a congratulations. They announced the Hall of Fame semifinalists. And, you know, Tony Dungy, I think everyone knew, was going to be there. But John Lynch is there as well. So there was some discussion last year when we were in Canton about whether or not John was going to get in. I know that Warren and Derek had both said they're going to make sure he gets in. As a fan, I love what John Lynch did. I don't think he could play the game the way he played it today. Do I think he's Hall of Fame first ballot? No, I don't. I love it. I love what he did. He's a great Buccaneer. I just don't think he is. But if he gets in there, I'm going to be happy as shit that he did. But I do think this is probably Tony's year, which would be tremendous. So great for them. Other pieces and parts. Movember, this month is all about Movember. Thank you guys who are in the Movember campaign. My mustache, you probably can't see too well. It's very light down at the bottom. But thanks for anyone who's donated. The treasure chest last tailgate was a little bit light, but we're going to put that towards the Movember campaign as well, and we will wrap up this month and try and do as much as we can for Movember. Jimmy Johnson in the chat room, I have not noticed about the 4 yards deep in shotgun snaps, but I will go back and look. I remember you mentioned it, so I definitely need to check and see what that's all about. But there's some other things that I did notice that I want to talk about tonight as well. So let's check the chat room real quick before I make any other comments. I think I covered it. Let me see. Movember covered. Claiborne family is awesome. Feral Roofing Contest is great. I think Spent dropped that in the chat room. If you guys don't mind, if you're on Facebook, go over there and give them some likes. That was good loving what they did. The Bears Watch Party will be at Wing House this week. Spent will be hosting that. So you guys make sure you get over there and help them. We're still collecting for the Claiborne Family Sack Hunger Campaign as well. So if you've got those non-perishable food items, that'd be great. Patches has some new articles in queue. And a big shout out to Patches. Is Patches in the chat room? He is. This guy has dealt for the last 2 weeks with an inept editing crew, and that's me and Carrie. We have both been torn different directions. Carrie actually took a vacation for the first time in 2 years. I've been working my ass off. It was a zoo. Patches self-published a number of things. He's been kicking ass. I'm still trying to get our fucking WordPress site cleaned up so that our pictures are not from 1924 and more of his articles are visible on the page. So big thanks to Patches as he continues to hone his craft. And again, hopefully you guys are reading the stuff he's writing because it's really, really solid stuff. And some people asked about the throwback shirts. We do have a couple of those left. I think we got about 10 or 11 of those left. So they'll have them with them at the watch party. I'll give those to Cheryl so she'll have them with her. All right. Now that is, in fact, all of the housekeeping. So let me go through this chat room. It doesn't matter where we pick. We'll find a way to fuck it up, says Shadowhawk. We'll go over that. Smith did a hell of a job keeping contained and actually showed burst and decent hand usage and seemed to be shot out of a cannon. Interesting, though, is that all six sacks came when the defense was in nickel. So that's some stuff you guys should definitely pay attention to. Jimmy Johnson's giving you some data about what defense we were in when the sacks came. And he's talking about Jacques Smith, 5'6", the fan club that I was starting on Twitter. If you guys follow me on Twitter, this week I had some alcoholic beverages whilst watching the game, which I usually don't do. And so I was a little bit more chatty on Twitter this week. In fact, I really had a good time on Twitter this week. Jacques Smith was a breath of fresh air. He definitely looked like he had fresh legs. I don't know that he's going to be able to maintain that, but it was nice to see. The opposite of that, the antithesis of that for Mr. Costanza, if he's still lurking in the dark, is, and I know that my man Skip, if Skip's in there, I don't know if Skip's over here. Skip Brown has been on Michael Johnson all the time, and I want to ask Steve White about Michael Johnson because this week Michael Johnson stood out like a sore thumb about how bad he was. Absolutely horrible. in my estimation. I've only gotten a chance to watch the first half again in Coach's film, and he looked just as bad as I remember looking. But I'm going to ask Steve White what he saw. Obviously, defensive line guy, he's going to know more than I do, but I actually saw some really, really bad things under Michael Johnson, and it's a good thing that it didn't cost us anything because the rest of the defense actually played pretty damn well. What else was I going to say? Oh, let me see. It's 9-11. I'm going to drop a list here in the chat room because Steve's calling in at 9:20. I don't want to interrupt him. I'm going to drop a really long list here. How long is this shit? That's going to be an obnoxious list. Let's see how bad this looks. It looks horrible. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go over a list of you of quarterbacks, and I want you to determine whether or not they're franchise or not, because I want to talk about this franchise quarterback discussion and the discussion the Shadowhawk actually just keyed in. There are people in the fan base, back to the thing that Calico talked about, that believe we should lose the games and hopefully get Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, under the hope that we can get a franchise quarterback. Now, we've talked about this before. You guys know that I don't believe that that sort of shit happens, and that's okay. We can agree to disagree. There's no problem with that. I don't get offended by it. But anecdotally, I thought that data would kind of hold up my position. Now, I've heard a number of different numbers, meaning pick numbers, that are the magic number that get you a chance for a franchise quarterback. So I went and I got all of the first round picks back to like 82, I think is how far back I went. And then I sorted it by only quarterbacks that were selected, and then I sorted it by only picks that were greater than 15. And then I marked who was a franchise quarterback in my estimation across that list. Now, that list ended up generating, I'll tell you in a second if I can control my keyboard, and I'll post this, 60 quarterbacks total. And of that 60, I marked 15 that were franchise quarterbacks. I went back to 82. Jim McMahon, John Elway, Steve Young. Ironically enough, we drafted and was a franchise quarterback, but not for us. Hold on to that little piece of data. That'll come in handy later. Troy Aikman. I don't think anyone's going to argue with Troy Aikman there. Where did I lose my list? There we go. Next one on my list was Drew Bledsoe, Steve McNair, Peyton Manning. I gave Byron Leftwich. No, I didn't. I took him off. Carson Palmer, Ben Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford. Cam Newton was a stretch, but I gave it to him, and Andrew Luck. And that was my list. And now Jimmy Johnson in the chat room says, there's no guarantee a QB will become a franchise type. You have to keep swinging until you get one. I don't disagree with that. That doesn't mean that they have to be in round one either. Right? So the concept of training your entire season towards a lottery to go after one, someone, because you think that there's a statistically higher chance, I think was crazy. So I went on to get more data about this, and I went and got, well, what makes someone a good pick? And if Fish is over there right now, is Tom Brady a franchise quarterback on the Jaguars? Right. You don't know, because the player isn't all the magic, right? He's not all the magic. But I went and I did a search for all of the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. All the way back, I think I went to 1980. The average round that they were drafted in was the third round. Now, there's some math that gets a little fucked up here, guys, because Kurt Warner was in this list, and he's undrafted. I put him as a 10th rounder to split the difference in the rounds based on the years. I did not give him a pick number, so the average pick number was 53, but that's because I didn't throw in a 200 in there for him. But the moral of the story is, you don't have to be a top five pick. You just don't. Now, I know people are emotionally invested in those guys, right? Because they're the guys you watch. They're guys that are on ESPN. A lot of times, they're guys that go to the school that you happen to support. Not in the case of the Pac-12, because no one really supports those guys, but you understand what I'm talking about. Second-round QBs as well, that doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with what we're doing with regards to our record, right? I don't disagree at all with second round, third round, fourth round, undrafted. I totally agree. Quarterbacks can be found anywhere. The concept I was railing against was this concept of tanking to go after a top draft pick. Now, you want me to really fuck with your head before Steve White comes on here? And let me tease you one more piece. That list of all of the Super Bowl quarterbacks. Now, that's a quarterback that played in the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean they won it, but they played in the Super Bowl. And in some cases, there were three because you had a backup that came in during the game. I think that happened four times across this sample set, which was all the Super Bowls back to 1980. I went and I picked who drafted them. Who drafted those quarterbacks? Now, this number came back interesting because it didn't do a select distinct. So if you had Brady getting into the Super Bowl four times or whatever the case may be, then the Patriots got bumped up. They had 12 instances. But the Patriots didn't have 12 unique instances. They actually had seven. You want to know how many the Bucs had? And we came in pretty comfortably in, I think, fourth place, by the way, for number of Super Bowl quarterbacks drafted. The number was three. Now, we can scoff all we want. We can scoff all we want at Trent Dilfer. We can't scoff at Steve Young. And we shouldn't scoff at Doug Williams. So I'll put these numbers up somewhere, but the interesting piece here, and we can also look at some other pieces of this, basically the 20 drafts before 2013, 50 QBs selected in the first round, 40% of them bust. So, interesting. I'm not sure if that number, those numbers are based on what this is, but certainly we compare them. We can also look at other positions, right? Because if you start looking at other pieces to the puzzle, the guys who are solid positionally are the guys you probably don't want to draft in your head because you think, what a waste. I can't believe we're going to spend a high draft pick on this guy. So let's go tackles and guards. 15 or better. And almost all of these guys are fucking rock stars. Now, the moral of this story is always bet on the fat man. Always. So Shadowhawk wants to know, isn't Dilfer largely considered the worst QB in history to win the Super Bowl? I don't know that there's any such rating for the worst QB to ever win a Super Bowl. I was never a Dilfer fan. The moral to my story is that we drafted a guy that got to the Super Bowl, right? I'm not saying he was great. What I'm saying is the Bucs have taken cuts at this. We can go back and look at the top draft picks they wasted on it, Vinny Testaverde, guys like that, right? Trades, etc. But, and like I said, I'll post this whole Excel file. You guys can play with it yourself. But if I were looking at this, quarterback is not what I'm taking a shot at. And that's not because I don't like Jameis Winston, because I like what the kid does. I think he looks tremendous. It's not because I don't like Marcus Mariota. He certainly looks like he's got some skills too. And with the new contract structure, you're not tanking your team financially to go take one of these guys at a high position. That's why people used to hate that number one position sometimes, because you were just bankrupt because of it. Hell, they're looking right now in New York about Eli taking up 17% of their salary, going, oh shit, do we really want to spend that much money? The Patriots list is really, really interesting. Well, I don't know. I'm old, so I find the Patriots list interesting because they've got, you know, I can't remember their damn players. Plunkett's the one I always remember because my dad was a huge Jim Plunkett fan, but it wasn't just him. What was the other guy's name? I can never remember. Give me a second, and I'll use all the filtering capabilities of Excel to answer my own question since I'm an asshole and didn't memorize it before the show. This is the kind of quality you'd expect from a hack fucking podcast. I'll tell you that right now. Here we go. Tony Eason. Look at that. The mighty Tony Eason. Drew Bledsoe. That was one I couldn't remember. Anyway. Steve White will be calling in here in a second. We're going to get his take. If you guys did not follow his Twitter, I don't know what the hell you call it, Twitter rant. It wasn't really a rant about the Bucks game. You should do that. I think he posted up there. Here are the numbers. Here are the guys. Oh, I forgot Steve Grogan. How do I forget Steve Grogan? The mighty Steve Grogan. Rich Gannon as well. Donovan McNabb, though, I don't remember. I didn't go back and check and see how that traded out because there's some trades that made this stuff happen, too. See? Kurt remembers Eason. The mighty Steve Grogan with the big neck. There's Steve White right there. Let's get Steve in here. Hey, Steve, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Man, I couldn't be better. I could. That's a lie. But it's fine. I'm doing great, and your audio sounds great tonight, and I have a feeling we're going to get some good insight from you. I was just railing against the concept of tanking for a draft pick. And I was using statistics to do it, which doesn't confuse my audience, but would confuse many. So welcome to the program. We're going to talk Bucks with you. I saw your Twitter stream that you had gone out when you were up at, what, 2 o'clock in the morning and couldn't sleep the other night?
Four o'clock in the morning, actually.
Yeah, if you're up,
one of them situations where you're up at four, I get up at six anyway, so you're kind of stuck. Like, I knew I probably wouldn't go to sleep, so I just went ahead and started watching films.
Yeah, when you're up at four, you're either up too late or you got up too damn early, you know, but either way, you're already screwed, so it don't really matter. Okay, so Steve, tell us what you saw this week. I got some questions for you, but I don't like leading you as a witness because you're usually better when I don't. But I do want to ask you one question I want you to try and sort of use as a backdrop. Did you see growth, or was this an aberration?
Well, no, I saw growth. Definitely defensively saw growth. The one thing that had kind of been a theme throughout the season was our underneath coverage, and specifically our linebackers, and specifically Mason Foster, were getting sucked up on play action a lot, and they weren't doing, you know, the correct drops, even if they didn't get sucked up on play action. And this was the first game where almost the whole game, we didn't get suckered on any kind of play action.
Whoa. I appear to have hung up on Steve White. Hopefully he is listening and will call back in. That's what I get for typing without looking where my cursor is. So, Steve, please do reach back out, and we'll get you back on the line. That's totally my fault. Shit. I haven't done that in years. Hopefully he'll figure this out quickly. Sorry about that, guys. Bama Bucks says Claiborne's a bust. All due respect, and not because I'm friends with the guy, but that's bullshit, and it's no more true than it was when Gerald McCoy was injured back-to-back years. But that's okay. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. There's Steve calling back in to correct my stupidity. Hey, Steve, the hack host just accidentally hung up on you. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I think it might have been my phone, actually. But what I was saying is that this is the first game all season where pretty much all game, guys were where they were supposed to be in their zone drops, looked a lot better as far as a man-to-man coverage. And of course, we got pressure. Now, the pressure might have been a little bit of an aberration. Their offensive line is absolutely terrible. Didn't get any better when their starting left tackle, who was actually pretty good, got hurt, I think, on the first series. So that part maybe was a little bit of an aberration, but the coverage part and all that, you saw a definite amount of growth on defense. And that's really, you got a glimpse on how this defense is supposed to look when it's run correctly. Yes, we had a couple breakdowns where DeSean Jackson got deep on us. Thankfully, they weren't able to complete those passes. And really, it was the same thing both times. We had Leonard Johnson matched up on DeSean Jackson, which probably should never happen in life. Pretty much man-to-man, and he didn't have any safety help over the top, and DeSean Jackson took off on him. But like I said, thankfully, they weren't able to complete those passes, but everywhere else, man, I thought you saw a lot of growth on defense. Offensively, Josh McCown continues to look like the quarterback we thought he would look like at the beginning of the season. I think the offense being opened up more and having more passes to push down the field is a lot more up his alley. And so that's why you've seen him play well the last 2 weeks on offense. Our offensive line, you know, really, there's another aberration there as far as the protection around McCown. I wouldn't say it was great, but it was greatly improved. However, a guy like Anthony Collins didn't really have anybody to threaten him this week. There was no dominant right-end pass rusher for him to block this week, so it still kind of remains to be seen if we've, quote-unquote, fixed that part yet. But you know, it's hard for me to nitpick a win, quite honestly, especially when we only have two so far. So I'm pretty much happy with the things I saw on film.
Well, and one of the things you mentioned was coverage, and I want to talk a little bit about that because what I saw showed some growth. There's a couple of things, there are nuances, and I don't know necessarily how they get coached across different coverages and different defenses and all that sort of thing. But when Mason slid into the passing lane and got that tip, right? The way I always think about defense is part of that chess game, right? You're trying to show the offense, you show a little bit of pressure, you're falling out of pressure. You're trying to make the quarterback make a decision that they think is smart that's actually playing into your hands, right? And some of that looked like we were doing it. The other thing that I saw more of, though there's still some times where we miss it, was redirects. You if you're playing zone, you may not have to, you're not pressing necessarily, but you want to redirect them into an area where you can have coverage. You're narrowing the field for them. And we've had this screenplay kill us three or four times, and it happened again this week on the touchdown in the last play or whatever the half. When he's coming, it was, I think it may have been Leonard Johnson or Major Wright. And Feige talked about this on his podcast last night. He comes on the blitz, and the back just gives him a little ole and heads out to the flat. Is Major supposed to at least disrupt him before he gets out there, or is Major just supposed to bust ass to get to the quarterback there? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't really know. If it's a blitz, it could go either way, quite honestly. Sometimes you have kind of a green dog where you only come if the guy's blocking. And so if he blocks on you, then you go ahead and blitz. And if he continues out, you have him. But I don't know if it was that kind of blitz or not. Could have just been that somebody else was supposed to have their running back and didn't pick him up, quite honestly. So it's hard to say. We had a couple breakdowns on that particular drive. I kind of felt it coming to it. It seemed like we may have relaxed a little bit, just like we did the week before, right before halftime. But thankfully, it really didn't hurt us that much.
Well, it's interesting because I looked at that. I went back because Feige was talking about on the show, so I went back and watched the coach's film, and Major, you know, came into him and let him out there in the flat. There was no one else there. I mean, once that pass was completed, he could have run to, you know, he could have run to the White House. But at any rate, it still does look like there's some improvements across the board. I agree with you on the pass rush. Specifically on the pass rush, we got to ask a guy who's been a whipping boy for this entire team all year. He's been the hallmark of sort of bad free agency. But he's been injured, and you've kind of defended him a little bit because of his injuries, and I get that, and I've seen some growth. But this week, for some reason, Michael Johnson looked even worse to me than he has in the past. Did you notice that? Did you see anything bad? Am I on left field?
Well, he had a sack. I don't know that he looked worse, but he didn't look good. And you know, you have the starting left tackle go out, and he ends up getting a sack, kind of cleaning up the mess from somebody else that got in pressure first. But you still didn't see him dominate the left tackle that they brought in the game, and that guy's terrible. I think he was like a second-round pick or something like that a couple of years ago, and they haven't figured out what they want to do with that kid. They just have to use him now as a backup left tackle. And so, to see him still doing that, you know, weak-ass finesse move, trying to do a dent and run, and then really, and once again, maybe it was worse, I'm not sure, but the one thing that kind of bothered me by the end of the game is that he almost had completely stopped trying to win one-on-ones, and you can't have that.
Right.
Not on this kind of defense. This defense is built for a defensive lineman that can beat guys one-on-one. I don't care how fast you are, big, strong, whatever, you have to be able to win one-on-ones. And then you're the big money, right defensive end guy we bring in. You know, and basically all he did after a while was he let McCoy get upfield, and then just kind of stood there at the line waiting to see if RG3 would take off running.
Exactly. He was waiting to catch.
Right. I don't know if we coached him up to do that, maybe because we was worried about RG3 scrambling, but it just looked awful on film. And so I don't know, man. I run out of answers when it comes to why he's playing so bad. I already said what I think will fix him overnight. Just tell him to start doing power rushes again. And the play where Trent Williams gets hurt, the left tackle, he was doing the power rush. And he was doing, you know, he actually got some good push and was at the quarterback when the left tackle gets his ankle stepped on. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe somebody got in his ear. Maybe we'll see him do that all game. Nope. Went right back to, trying to run around guys, and that shit just doesn't work.
Yeah, it was sad to see. There was one particular play that called out. I forgot how they got the ball behind him, whether it was a screen or a draw, what it was. But the ball ended up coming up behind him, and he didn't track the ball down. But Smith from the other side of the field tracked it down across him, and that can't look good on film in the defensive line room, can it?
Right. It no, not at all. And once again, I mean, you're supposed to be the guy. You know, you're supposed to be the one that kind of is getting on everybody else's case for having plays like that. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the dynamics is over there and one buck plays when it comes to Michael Johnson. Obviously, they have to be disappointed in him. And the truth be told, injuries and all, right now, Jaquez Smith should be starting for him just off production. And really because he gives us a better chance to win.
Let's talk about that man.
You got to throw him out there.
Let's talk about that man, all right? So 5'6 comes in and starts killing people. I haven't watched enough to know whether this was because it was a bad line or whether he's got some unique skills. What's your take on Smith, and have you been watching him before? You know, is this something you've got a background on, or is this new to you too?
Well, it was a little bit of both to answer your question. You know, I've actually been saying that Jaquez Smith has earned additional playing time for about the last 3 or 4 weeks. He's basically the only defensive end we have that can consistently turn the corner. I wasn't that much of a fan when he first got here. They just threw him on the nickel rush team at left end, and you know he didn't really seem all that comfortable at first. But then Johnson gets hurt a little bit, and they start playing him on the right side a little bit, and he's getting pressure, and you know he's making good moves, turning his hips, doing all the things that you wish Michael Johnson was trying to do. And you know, I said when he started the one game, I said, you know, if this guy goes out there and plays the way I think he can, shit, Michael Johnson might end up on IR or something because we truly won't really need him. But as luck would have it, the game when Jaquez Smith started, he supposedly was starting in place of Michael Johnson. However, for whatever reason, they still played him on the left side more so than on the right side,
right,
which I thought was ridiculous. And so you didn't really get to see what he could have done as a right end, as a starting right end in that game. And of course, we lost. And so I guess they felt like, well, you know, we'll go back to Johnson once he gets healthy. But from what I've seen from him on the right-hand side, and really on both sides, because now he's coming on rushing from the left-hand side too, but from the right side, man, he's by far the best end we have as far as being a pass rusher. And so he needs to be out there more, plain and simple.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how they do the platoons and get guys that playing time. Because like you said, I mean, even if Will's not doing as well as we want him to do on the left-hand side, it would have been nice to see him over there and Smith on the right to give it,
right,
give us a chance
well,
see
the thing
that.
About Will is, and this is what I always say is, okay, if you're not going to be a dominant pass rusher, you better be a dominant
run stopper.
And that's
right,
the thing that Will has done. Michael Johnson has done neither. And he was supposed to be pretty good against the run. I haven't seen it. You know, I did see it on film in Cincinnati, but since he's put on that Bucs uniform, man, he gets pushed all around, all over the place, and you know, he had a couple of chances to make big plays the other day and missed a tackle for a loss in the backfield. I haven't seen it. You know, he's going to get you 2 or 3 tackles for loss a game almost. He's still, you know, trying to work to be a pass rusher, but at the very least, you know, if they try to run the ball at Will Golson, he's probably going to knock it out for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you keep him at left, you put Smith at right, and then you just, you know, rotate English in, maybe Bowers or what have you. But right now, I mean, Michael Johnson just doesn't factor in as one of our best pass rushers, and yet he's on the field most of the time when we have, you know, a pass rush situation.
Now, it'll be interesting to see if the same model works there that we saw with Deshaun Golson, who lost playing time, and we'll ignore his chirping in the media, but he lost playing time because he wasn't playing particularly well. And then last game, it seemed like he had one of his better games of the year. Now, I know you've been very critical of our safety play. What did you see out of the safety play specifically and how it pertained to coverage this week?
Well, last week when I was talking about Deshaun Golson, I said, you know, basically he has the yips right now. That's his biggest problem. He's a big hitter, you know, but, you know, after last year and all the suspensions and fines and stuff, kind of feel like he's scared to hit somebody. And not scared as in physically scared, but just scared he's going to get a penalty or, you know, get fined again. And so while maybe he's not the ball hawk right now, he could still be making a bunch of big hits if he went ahead and let loose. And that's basically what he did against the Redskins. Once again, I don't know what his motivation was or whether somebody told him, look, you're playing too tentative or what. But he goes out there, he got a fantastic hit on DeSean Jackson one time when RG3 had to throw the ball, he just laid him out, and DeSean Jackson kind of just took a knee for a while. And that's the biggest hit we've seen from DeSean Golson this year.
Yeah.
And so I think that combined with the fact that we didn't do a whole lot of that disguising and stuff like we have been doing.
Right.
Against Washington. And so I think those two things kind of helped him become aggressive again. And that's what he needs to be. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and get you 10 interceptions. But he can go out there and be a tone setter. He can go out there and knock the shit out of guys and make them scared to go across the middle. And sometimes that can be better. Well, I don't want to say better, but sometimes that can be almost as good as getting those interceptions when you're that kind of intimidated. And so, you know, no, I don't want him getting 15-yard penalties. No, I don't want to get him fined and suspended. But he has to believe that he can still go out there and knock the hell out of people and make a contribution to this team, or he's not any good to us. Because once he's, you know, he's been playing passer most of the year, he just wasn't any good to us.
You know, it's interesting. He's got to do what Seattle has done a good job of coaching Cam Chancellor and their team to do, which is hit hard and hit legal. And it seems like that's something that was not happening, because you're right. You can't be afraid. You got to go in there and make those hits. And hopefully he'll come around. I mean, I like the way he plays. I like the physical tone that he can provide. And we definitely need him to play well. Now, speaking of playing well, we've got the Bears coming up. Coming off of a win in the Redskins. I'm not even going to do the whole two games out of first place bullshit, because that doesn't matter. I know how math works, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a team trying to get better at this game. What do you see happening this week going to Chicago? Lovey returning to Chicago. What do you see happening on the field this week?
Well, it's going to come down to our offensive line again. Like I said, that was one of those things where I felt like might have been an aberration. Anthony Collins is going to have to go against Jared Allen. And Jared Allen is not the Jared Allen from 3 years ago, but last week, for whatever reason, I guess it was because he knew Matt Khalil so well from playing with him, he just, beat the dog crap out of him. I mean, he actually did look like a young Jared Allen. So maybe, he takes that and got some confidence, and now Anthony Collins has his hands full again. So, you just never know. But I feel like, what I've told people leading up to the season is kind of now coming to fruition. If you give Josh McCown time, he's going to find the open guy. He's going to make a good pass, and we're going to move the chains. But that's a big if. We got it done on Sunday. It's just, a matter of seeing if we're going to be able to do it against the Bears again. I think the Bears are a very beatable team. They have a formidable offense with a quarterback who will throw you the football. We have to go out and have another game where everybody's on the details, guys are dropping where they're supposed to drop on defense, and our offense scores the football, because you're not going to win this game scoring 10 or 14 points. We're going to have to probably score at least 21 to beat them. So it's kind of going to have to go hand in hand. And, of course, one thing we kind of miss on sometimes is our special teams. Our special teams are going to have to show up again, too. They actually played pretty well against the Redskins. And so we're going to have a repeat of that performance as well.
It's interesting that what we saw this week against the Redskins, we would call playing pretty well on special teams.
All we did was muff one punt. So
they were in position to down some punts for Kanan. I mean, I got a lot of shit because I told people to get off of Kanan's nuts because he was playing well. I don't understand what's happened with Kanan on kickoffs, right? There's a lot of people that think Kanan's over the hill. I don't spend a lot of time talking about punters because I just don't. But I don't understand where his leg went, because he used to be able to kick the ball into the 15th row on kickoffs, and that seems to have disappeared too. I don't know whether we just tired him out because of our ineptitude on offense or what happened. But this week in Chicago, as formidable as their defense seems to be, and their defensive line specifically, last week their offensive line seemed to struggle, and that's been an on-again-off-again thing up there as well. And Cutler is prone to make some mistakes. Do you see the defensive line being able to potentially take advantage of that? I know you said it may have been an aberration because Washington's offensive line was so bad.
Yeah. I do. We'll see if that's the case or not, but their right tackle is fucking terrible. I mean, he's just awful. And the left tackle, once the starter went out, wasn't much better. We did get some good push in the middle. Clinton got a sack. I think McCoy might have had a sack and a half, but We'll see. You know, the one way we'll find out if it's an aberration or not is if the eggs are repeated. So we'll see.
Well, my fat ass is going to be freezing watching the game, so hopefully they win. The last time we went to Chicago, I went there and we got a win, so hopefully we'll be able to repeat that. Mike Evans obviously blew up this week. Josh McCown looked great. Who are you going to give the sword from last week to, and who are you going to give the skull to?
If I give a sword, obviously I'm going to have to give it to Mike Evans. You know, like I said, from day one, I thought the kid was going to be a beast, and he's coming to his own now with Josh McCown at quarterback, able to get the ball to him accurately, where we're not losing yards because he's throwing it, you know, underthrowing him or whatever. He has to make some kind of ridiculous catch now, throwing it to him in stride, so he can get those extra yards. And obviously, I would say that the dud would be Michael Johnson. I continue to be frustrated watching him on film. I know he's a better player than that. He really is. He's got a lot of ability. He had a great attitude when I was over there with him. I can't put my finger on it why nobody can just go up to him and tap him on the shoulder and say, "Hey, man, do power rushes every play.
Knock that shit off.
If I was a defensive line coach, I promise you, I would tell him this. As soon as you make a move that is not a power rush, I'm pulling your ass out the game. and then we'll put you back in later, and we'll see how that goes. No, I'm dead ass serious.
No, I know you are.
I would tell him, this is the way I'm going to correct you. If you can't do it the way I want you to do it, you're not going to fucking do it at all. But for whatever reason, we can't seem to get that job done. And you know, like I said, I don't have an answer for it, but it's just frustrating as hell watching the kid because I know he's got a lot more ability than that.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if he can manifest that ability. We got the Bengals coming up here in a few weeks and a chance to kind of, you know, I don't know. Steve, you were a player. Is there anything to that going against your former team thing? Does it get you extra
hyped
up?
Of course it is.
Okay.
Of course it is. I mean, shit, if I'd have had the opportunity to play the Bucs after I left here, I'd have tried to kill the ass. I promise. And every time we played Philly, I tried to kill him. You know, a lot of people don't even realize I had, like, 3 sacks against Philly in the playoff game, which is damn near as much as I had during the regular season. But for real, I had 3 sacks against them in all the playoff games we played them because I fucking hated them. I hated the fucking guts. They didn't give me a chance. They wanted to change me to linebacker and didn't give me a chance to try to transition to that, even after I lost, like, 30 fucking pounds for them. So, yeah, I fucking hated their guts and couldn't wait to try to show him up. So I imagine he's going to have some little fan kind of feeling like they should have tried to keep him a little bit harder than they did. And we'll see. You know, one thing about it, though, if he plays the same way he's been playing, ain't shit going to change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely not going to change, and Cincinnati's going to be like, hey, we saved some money. So I want before I let you go here, Steve, I appreciate you calling in. For those of you who don't know, this is Steve White, former defensive end for the Bucs and Jets and a heck of a writer, and you can follow him on Twitter at SGW94. But Josh McCown was sort of – the quarterback position was a galvanizing position. It always is, right? And I was excited to see Josh play the way I thought he could play this week. And it wasn't just playing well. He was very, very good this week, deceptively good if you look at some of these throws that he made getting killed. Do you think that we're going to see more of that in Chicago? Do you think the weather's going to affect Josh? This is a kid who seems to be able to play anywhere because he has played everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think it'll make much difference at all. You know, like I told you, know, I said this, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or even just, you know, say I was 100% right, but I told people at the beginning of the year when Josh got off to a poor start that a lot of it had to do with the fact that our offense sucked. At that time, we weren't pushing the ball down the field. We were basically running what amounted to a West Coast offense, which is not Josh's forte. You know, his thing, why he looked so good last year in Chicago, is he was pushing the ball up the field. He took those two big wide receivers they have and they took the big tight end and used them and threw it up and let them make plays. He didn't have that opportunity early in the season. Now that he does, you're seeing kind of what he can do, especially if he gets some time. So it's really going to come down to how much time he gets. Thankfully, you know, he is mobile enough to kind of get himself out of some situations that maybe the other guy couldn't have. But at the same time, you know, if he gets time, you look at those touchdown throws, he isn't really bothered at all. You know, he's got time to plant his feet, step forward, and make a good throw. And if you give him that kind of opportunity, I'm going to give a shit who you put on Vincent Jackson or Mike Evans. Somebody's ass is going to be toast.
Yep. Well, it's going to be good to see Steve. Looking forward to it. Thanks again for calling in. As always, you guys make sure you follow Steve out there and get a read of his articles. He writes not just about the Bucks, but about the whole NFL. And it's a great way to learn more about football in general. Steve, we're certainly fortunate to have you on the show.
Thank you.
All right, man. Take care, Steve. Steve White, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. I always do. Let's get back to discussion of the Buccaneers. I didn't want to seem to be dismissive in the chat room, but sometimes it's hard to follow the chat room whilst trying to carry on the conversation with someone that you're interviewing. Keys to the game this week for the Bears. They're not rocket science, guys. It's one of those things. And by the way, the phone line's open. If you guys want to call in, you can do that. Certainly, I enjoyed that a couple weeks ago. We had the phone lines open, 813-964-7364. We've got to continue to create some pressure. I don't give a shit who's doing it. I don't really care who gets the credit for it. And Bama Bucks in the chat room, I wasn't busting your balls earlier. Are you still there? You're still there. And we can certainly have the Claymore discussion, but in the interest of full disclosure, I do know Adrian well, and I do like Adrian a lot, but as a guy who's coached the game, I can separate a personal relationship from a professional relationship. His first season, he was far better in pass defense than I thought he was ever going to be, and I thought he was effective in run defense. When I went and looked up the data from Pro Football Focus, and admittedly, Calico's in the chat room, and I know he's not a huge PFF fan, and not everyone is, but I can't remember every play of the 2011 season. He graded out more poorly against run than against pass. He was, I think, top 10 or top 11. I think it was 11, which would be the only reason you'd say top 11 in pass pressure. But he was sandwiched in between Chris Long and Kyle Van Der Bosch and Dwight Freeney at the bottom around 59 in rush defense. But those are also some pretty good names. So it's tough to say he sucked as a rookie in that role. So the bust conversation, I think, is something we have to pat the brakes on, not just with him, but with players in general. When they're coming out of college, especially when there are injuries. When you're coming off of injuries, you've got to be careful. I mean, I can't remember. I don't even want to go after all the people that said Gerald McCoy was a bust, and now that everyone's giving the guy reach arounds because he's a hell of a player. Right? Now, I'm not saying that Adrian Claiborne is going to be as impactful as Gerald McCoy, because you don't usually get two of those guys on one line. Right? You just don't. But that being said, I think Adrian is far more than serviceable and would have helped out this defense tremendously had he been able to stay healthy. But the fact of the matter is he was not. And that's really a painful truth to Adrian's story and to other players' story. If you can't stay healthy, you can't stay on the team. And that is just fucking miserable at times. But it is a part of the game. So we'll see. And it's tough. And Calico, I know the phrase you're using, he just can't stay healthy. And I just used it too. I hate it that we use that phrase because there's nothing. That's like people said that Gerald didn't know how to tackle. That's why he kept tearing his bicep. That was absolute bullshit. That was absolute bullshit. We knew that then. Injuries happen. And only when you look back over time. I mean, look at this poor Sam Bradford situation. I mean, the guy's got all the talent in the world, but he can't stay healthy. It's really, really tough. And Bam, I'm not saying you're being disrespectful. You don't come across as someone being disrespectful. When you used bust, you weren't doing it the way some folks on Twitter do. I didn't mean to cast you in that light. But as far as less than expected, yes, if you're not on the field, you're less than expected. I mean, you expect to get, when you make an investment, and look at football players as investments, and you guys who've been with me for a while know that I've talked about this way before, and it can be disconcerting to some because it dehumanizes the players. But players in any game like this are assets for the team, right? You're buying chess pieces. And if I can't use the knight that I just bought as a knight, then I fucking wasted money. And it may not be because he's a bad knight. It may be because he's not available, and so I can't use him at all. And that sucks. So what happens sometimes is that knight that you bought that you couldn't use because he wasn't healthy ends up going somewhere else, and you find out, Jesus, I really actually made a good decision buying that knight, but he just didn't get a chance to show it here. Maybe it was an injury issue or a systemic issue. You just don't know. But it's a bastard when you have to deal with it. It really is. But at any rate, as a Bucks fan, I was excited about some of the nuances. And when we talk about redirects, if you guys remember, I wish I had gotten the tape queued up. We did a little bit of film work, I guess it was 4 weeks ago now, where we had a really good view on coaches' film of the Tampa 2. And one of the things that people don't pay attention to in the Tampa 2, everyone looks at the middle linebacker. If they know what the fuck the Tampa 2 is, and they don't just say, oh, the Bucks play a Tampa 2 defense. If we get past that stupidity, which my audience usually does, thankfully, if you get past that, one of the things in the Tampa 2 that has to happen is your cornerbacks have to redirect your outside receivers inside. They need to redirect them. It's not a jam. It's not a press. It's a redirect. They're not expected to hold them up. What they're trying to do is force them to places where there's additional help in the zones. You don't want them to spread people out too far, because if you create space in those zones, that's where quarterbacks can start eating you up. And it seems like such a simple, minuscule thing, but with this game the way it is, and with so many games, those details are what matter. They absolutely matter. And so whether it's the redirects by the cornerbacks or whether it's a redirect by Mater Wright, and you know, Steve, we've said this before, if you don't know what the call was, it's tough to blame someone. But if you look at the alignment before the snap on that screen, it looked like Major Wright had responsibility for a back to the flat. If you see the back going to the flat and not blocking you, something's got to go off in your head saying, well, fuck, if I don't get home, who's got him? That's something that's got to get better. That said, our linebackers, I thought, played very well. Now, there was an article today, I think, on Joe Buck's Fan about Levante David nursing a hamstring issue. I don't know how bad it is. It was limited in practice. Hamstrings can be nasty. There's some speculation about the weather being a problem up there. You know, in my estimation, you put some Kramer's Red Hot on that and some fucking tights and you just call it good. I don't think they're going to tear them up, but, you know, hopefully it won't impact us from a depth perspective. Seeing heart attacks on too much. Oh, you guys are talking about Tedford. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a discussion we haven't really had is what the hell we're doing offensive coordinator, but I think it's too early to do that. And please don't anyone mention Mike Martz for fear of giving me an aneurysm. I still don't know how this guy is being given the credit that he's gotten for being some sort of an offensive savant, given his performance after he left the Rams. But I also did not track his behavior as closely as I should have. I just anecdotally don't think he's as good as people give him credit for. Anyway, let's look at predictive MVPs for the Bears. One game does not a season make. There's no doubt about that. And you know, I'm not pounding my chest about what Josh McCown did, because that's the quarterback that Josh McCown is. He can be that quarterback. He has to be that quarterback every time he steps out on the goddamn field. That's what quarterbacks have to do. Yeah, you have bad games from time to time, but you've got to make the right decision most of the time. You've got to make those throws, and that's why I was giving credit to him, because that's, my sword goes to Josh McCown last week, not because I'm on Josh's nuts. Mike Evans doesn't have that day without Josh McCown putting the ball where it has to be. Now, Mike Evans balled his ass off, and I love what we said on Mike Evans. His awareness on the field, his ability to get his feet down, to create space, his ability to create space with offensive pass interference and not get it called as a rookie is freaking amazing. Absolutely amazing for a big man to get away with that shit. At some point, if the gods of football see fit and we get to actually use our 6'7 tight end, this offense could look really, really interesting. When you got Vince on one side, Evans on the other, ASJ coming off the tight end, don't let us learn how to block, because then if we find any reputable fast guy to run crossing routes underneath this shit who can actually catch it, the offense becomes very interesting. The speed and space concept that Tedford talked about is not hard to understand when you look at some of the groceries that are there. But it all falls apart, whether it's Glennon or McCown or Peyton Manning, it doesn't matter if your quarterback's on his ass and can't throw. Now, we still couldn't run the ball last week. I went back, like I said, and watched the first half in coach's film. We were back to zone primarily. There was not much room to run. When we did run successfully, I told you guys about the motion crack. I actually tweeted about it. I think it was Shepard who came in motion. I'm a huge fan of that fucking play. You can't run it all the time, because once you ear hole that defensive end once, he gets his head on a swivel and it's a bit of an issue. But when you crack a guy down with the receiver and then you pull your tackle and your guard outside, that's a convoy. That's a chance to really spread the field. And that forces responsibility focus. That defensive end, if he's got edge contain, he's not only thinking about, I've got to get to the outside shoulder of this tackle or the tight end that's in front of me, but I've got to be careful that some little 180-pound receiver isn't coming across and going to ear hole me. That changes his game, either side. And it should force him to cheat a bit to the outside, which can create some space in the middle, which is really, really nice. Tight end, I thought we just had nimble backup fullbacks filling in. Oh, yeah. So the fullback situation, by the way, Javorski Lane, who I had a man crush on in training camp, was not good this week in the first half anyway when he was in. making bad decisions on where to make the blocks in the hole, which is our running game just fucking sucks. And you know, is Bucks Princess here? I don't think Nikki's here. She was talking about Doug Martin, and a lot of people are very down on Doug Martin. You know, rumors are rampant that the organization's down, not as bad as a person, just as that's not who they want to go with. They've drafted Sims. You've got Sims. You've got Rainey. You've got Mike James as well. It doesn't matter who the fuck you put back there, guys. There's nowhere to go. I don't understand. We had a successful week of running primarily power man scheme, and then the team goes away from it. I don't understand why that would be the case. I really don't. Martin Miggs wants to fuck with me a little bit and say Blunt's available because, believe it or not, our fan base actually said we should go sign him again. Now, here's the thing about Blunt. You guys will remember when Blunt was here. I wasn't a Blunt fan off the field. Never was. I thought he got a bit of a bad rap. People started accusing him of not being able to do certain things on the field that he was actually able to do. But again, they don't let facts get in the way of their narrative. We've got plenty of groceries on that shelf. Why would we invite that? Why would we invite that? Now, Bama Bucks brings up the Redskins are a pretty darn good run D. And I don't disagree. But when I look at who we were blocking, and again, it was only from the first half of the coach's film. So, you know, the second half, we could have blocked everyone perfectly and just sucked. We were just not executing particularly well. Now, there were a couple of times where we're getting chased down. Oh, Jesus, what the hell is the guy's name? Fucking fast white guy on the edge. Why do I not know his name? I'm getting old, guys. Kerrigan? Is that it? He was 91. Yeah, Ryan Kerrigan. Kerrigan's fast, guys. He's fast. He chased down not one, but two stretch plays from the backside when the play is designed to not block him, okay? We didn't fuck that up. That's how the play is designed. You're supposed to get to the other side of the field fast enough that he can't possibly make that play. We got to the other side of the field so goddamn slowly, or he is so fast, or some combination of those two things, that he's making a tackle 3 yards in the backfield. That's a problem. So, anyway, you can't have your blunt and smoke it too, says CJ. Nice. All right, let's look at Skulls and Swords from you guys from last week. Did those get posted over on Facebook, Cheryl? If they did, I will go over there. If you guys did not post them on Facebook, throw them in here. I'll give you guys some shout-outs on who you had for Skulls and Swords for last week for the Buccaneers. For those of you who are new to the podcast, Skull is the MVP, a sword, or Skull is the bonehead, and a sword is the MVP. It's just sort of our take on it from the logo, which actually was the inverse of that, Skulls and Swords. Let me see here. I will go over to the What the Buck wall and see if there was anything posted there. And be thinking about your predictive MVPs on offense and defense, because Kurt and I will be there watching this game, and hopefully we're going to be seeing a Buccaneer victory. Now, I will tell you this. When I went to Soldier Field the last time and we won, the crowd was fine. They started chirping when they came back, and then we ended up winning. Jeremy Stevens caught a touchdown at the end, or a conversion at the end, to give us the victory, which was stupendous. And then they weren't nearly as nice, but I would certainly love to once again leave that stadium with a victory. Here we go, some Skulls and Swords. Nice. Nice. There's some good ones in here, guys. You're going to like these, I think. All right. Kurt Creel, Sword, Werner for being hurt enough to let someone else play. Skull, whoever keeps signing off on these garbage return men. Well played. Well played indeed. Yeah, it was Kerrigan. Thanks, guys. Drew Hamilton is saying Skull to Thigpen for his fumble, I'm assuming, and then Sword to Evans, which is an obvious and solid pick. I don't think anyone would argue about an Evans pick, even though I picked McCown, which is fine. Justin Michael out of Charlotte. Is that Justin? Maybe a different Justin. Sorry. Sword 56 Smith had a bigger game than Evans. I don't know if he had a bigger game than Evans, but he sure as hell was impactful. Skull Tedford, abandoned when healthy, Thigpen alligator arms. Dave Mega Dave Pratt, Sword, who else? Mr. Mike Evans, Skull, Thigpen for being scared of the ball. Jason Watson, Sword, Daniel Snyder, despite media coverage, protests, and a coaching change, he refuses to change the name of his defensive back coach. That's brutal. Skull, Kevin O'Day, if it was possible to have a kickoff blocked, I feel it would have happened to us. He said both of those jokes were shamelessly stolen, but I appreciate that you reused them. Guy Carr, Sword for Arroyo for having some balls calling plays for once, a Skull to Thigpen. Kurt McDonald from New Zealand, Sword, whoever knocked the shit out of Jackson, I salute you. Great hit on that punk, which shut him out for the game. Honorable mention to McCown. I thought he played a great game. His pocket presence was very good. Skulled whichever coach was making the late sub with 10 seconds left on the play clock. Alan Carone, RG3 had skulls all day. Lucas Bodmark, Jacques Smith, DeMar holding Dotson. Amanda Minif, I love seeing a girl in here. We don't have enough female participations. That's good to see. Swords to Evans and McCown, Skull to Thickman. Little reminder on this, and I know no one seems to care, even though it is the rule. We like to keep one sword and one skull, otherwise it's too easy. But thank you very much, and continue to give us swords and skulls, as it were. Joseph B., Sword to Evans, Skull to Dotson, Dean Adderholt. Sword, Evans all the way, Skull, the O-line every week. Damn it, one person. Tom Pollock, Mike Evans, and RG3. I'm not sure. We don't usually pick someone from the other team, but that's fine. Bucko Pat Dawson, Sword to Evans, Skull to Thigpen. Ben Curtis, Sword to Evans, Skull to Dotson. Chris Fisher, Sword to McCown, Skull to Michael Johnson. Daniel Gonzalez, two swords. Yeah, fuck it. Just change the whole damn rule, Daniel Gonzalez. You know, whatever's good for you. It's your game. Two swords, Mason Foster for tipping the interception to Jonathan Banks, pick six. So he's giving both of them for the same play. Skull, Muff kicks Thigpen. Bob Ripperton, Sword to Evans, Skull to Thigpen. Patches is in here with a sword to Mike Evans and a skull to Charles Sims. A skull to Charles Sims? What the fuck did he do to you? Eric Sabine, sword to Mike Evans, a skull to nobody. No skulls. Sounds like some people's personal life. Taunting penalty on Tillman provoked by Clayton. Oh, you guys are going down memory lane. You say you play... don't know what that was. Okay. So, anyway, Patches, are you still over here? You're still over here. So let me know what Sims did to gave you the reason to give him a skull. We're at 10:02. Let's do predictive MVPs. Guys, going home in Chicago, I would love to say that we're going to run the ball for 400 fucking yards in bad weather and grind their heart into the ground and then piss on the remains. But I don't think that this offense has that capability, and it bothers me that it doesn't. But you've got Vincent, and you've got Mike, and you've got ASJ, and you've got Josh starting to get his feet underneath him. If we can give him some time, I think he has his second good game in a week, and I think the predictive offensive MVP is going to be Josh McCown again. He may be able to move the ball around a little bit more. Vince may be getting more into the game, though I don't know that I know Mike Evans can be stopped right now. He's playing terrific football. At some point, they may start calling him for that offensive pass interference, and that's a concern that I have. On defense, I'd love to ride the Jock Smith bandwagon here because we have to get pressure, and I don't know that who else is going to generate it because McCoy is playing good football. That line is suspect. I think interior pressure could be very, very useful. It's going to flush Cutler, make him make mistakes. I'd love to pick someone in the secondary who's going to be stupendous and really step up, but I don't know that that's the case. We've got to get that pressure. We've got to get the defensive line active. I think Gerald McCoy is the right pick. I think he needs a big game to remind people why he got all that money, so I'm going to go with Gerald McCoy. I know both are amazingly safe picks, so you guys can call me out for being a pussy about that if you would like to. But those are my picks. I'm not sure what yours are. And what do I see the game doing? I think, and I mentioned this, who did I talk to? I think I was when I was on Fish's podcast last night in the chat room with his folks. I mentioned that I think we're going to win, and we're going to win big. I don't think it's going to be a close contest. I do think we'll get some defensive activity for turnovers and or scores. I think that these franchises are going in different directions. I know that there's been all sorts of unrest here, people calling for Lovey's head, which is just absolutely atrocious and stupid in my opinion, but no one seems to give a shit about my opinion in some ways. Chicago's imploding, even though they were able to get things turned around a little bit. I think that you're talking about a game that could be 30, I'm going with 30 to 14, 30 to 14, maybe 30 to 17. So for anyone who's new, realize that I always pick the Bucks. It is always predicated. It's always predicated on us doing everything right. I don't bet football because I am too emotional. So there you go. Patches, despite like two good runs, he did a whole lot of nothing. Well, lots of people did a whole lot of nothing, but did more nothing than that, I thought. But didn't help him putting it on Sims, despite how much I like Sims. Oh, Drew Hamilton calling him the turf monster got Sims. Shadowhawk, the Mike Dick is 425 Tampa 3. That is a great reference. Absolutely great reference. Yeah, Chicago definitely wants to fire another coach. What's Skip Brown saying damn about my prediction of 30 to 14? I know, it's not going to be popular. It could be bullshit. But hey, I don't care. I'm going to go to Chicago. My man Kurt Creel and I are going to be up there. We're going to have a great time. I want to thank you guys for tuning into the show. If you're going to the watch party, make sure you get out there early to get a table. We have that whole back area reserved and pretty much half the restaurant reserved for the What the Buck watch party. Bring non-perishable food items to donate to the Clayton family Sack Hunger campaign. And if you bring an item, you'll get a raffle ticket. There are prizes that are given away at halftime as well as at the end of the game for people who donate food and or gift cards or whatever you guys can feel can donate. If you wear your What the Buck gear or you have your What the Buck membership card, which you get simply by signing up for our mailing list, it costs you nothing. You will get 15% off of your bill on that day. Other than that, I think I've covered all of the housekeeping. Thanks, Fish, for the kind words. I appreciate that. I appreciate all you guys in the chat room. Kurt, Drew Hamilton, Bama Bucks, Creel 62, Jimmy Johnson, Just Call Me, Patches, Skip Brown, Martin Migg, Shadowhawk, Fish, Calico Jack, and the Commish. And I know we had some people that dropped off probably because I was prattling on about this stuff. So I'm glad that you guys were able to join us. If you do listen to the podcast or if you participate, and Fish actually reminded me of this because I haven't done it enough either. If you get this on iTunes, please do give us a review. If you get it on Stitcher, please do give us a review. If you want to participate in what we do, participate in what we do. Retweet our tweets. Let people know about it. The more the merrier. You've got some great content, and I don't mean to be all on his nuts, but Fish does a great job on the Bucks Brief podcast. I think we do a pretty admirable job here at What the Buck as well. And from going around to other teams in the league, getting content like this is really kind of cool, and we'd love to have more people participating in it, whether it be participating in the dialogue or commenting in posts, going back and forth with Patches on his articles, these sorts of things. That's what we really need. So if you don't mind doing those things, it won't take you too much time to do. I would appreciate it. If you are supporting us in the Movember movement, please get out there and either take pictures of your mustache or donate or spread the word about that as well. We'll be doing that until the end of the month, and hopefully we can get a sizable contribution put into the Movember movement. If you don't know what that is, it is a movement to fund research and treatment for prostate and testicular cancer, primarily, though it's focused on men's health. Those are the two areas that they focus on most notably. So anyway, for Spent and the whole crew here, by the way, happy birthday to Buck Crazy today. He's probably drunk right now, and he should be. He's going to do a whole birthday week, so we need to make sure that he doesn't get killed. And you guys have fun at the watch party because I won't be there. So take lots of pictures and make sure you get them tweeted out there. Tweet them at What the Buck, and I'll make sure that we retweet them. So for everyone else, I am old school, and I am out of here.
So I give zero fucks.